This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we delve into those, what do we delve into? People's lives.
Yeah.
We wiggle around people's lives and
we do.
And worm our way into their affections and talk to them about some difficult moments.
We do.
After we've got their trust.
You're really not selling this podcast.
Sorry, I'm really tired.
Yeah, I'm tired as well. We talked about this off air, didn't we? It's
Is anyone else tired?
There's a sort of tiredness epidemic going around. Everyone is knackered. We were trying to work out why, weren't we? Like, whether it's just sort of post COVID. Well, I know COVID hasn't gone, but like post lockdown tiredness. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I just don't want to go out anywhere now.
It's that time of year. It's gloomy and bleak, and it's not the same. You've got to put your jacket. Well, having said that, I don't mind dressing for autumn and winter. I quite like getting like wearing a sort of nice warm coat and stuff. But it's still, you still got to step out into the cold. Like, it's still not ideal. It's not the same as summer or spring.
Yeah, I'm much more of a winter. I like the winter clothes thing. Like, I'm wearing a big sweatshirt, and you know, I quite like shorts, but I don't really like just going out in a tee. I don't know. I'm a bit self conscious. So I prefer wrapping up and covering up, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I like that aspect of it. And I don't mind a bit of rain and stuff either, but maybe it's the light aspect. Maybe it's the dinginess.
Well, we spoke about that with last week's guest, I think, Nazanin Ghaffar, about SAD lamps and obviously she has to get up in insane times for work as a weather presenter, but just in general. They're actually probably quite beneficial. I actually had a tab open on my laptop of SAD lamps and I sort of closed it. I don't know where it's gone now. But I wonder if that's something that, wonder if any of our listeners have any that sort of, maybe they only use during autumn and winter during the gloomy times, because there's a scientific sort of backing behind it that does make you feel a bit more down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think they're quite effective, those lights. I'm sure people I've known have got them and say they're pretty effective. But I guess I get it's obviously still an artificial experience, isn't it? So I don't know how much it would benefit you just sort of having a light next to you. But I guess if you have it on near your desk or something, if you're working, it might help.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Listeners, let us know. I'm intrigued to know if anyone has one and whether they find them effective or not, because I think I am actually going to look into investing in one, actually, I think. In our new office in the cabin. I think I might do that. Anyway, we should probably talk about this week's guest rather than last week's guest. As good as she was amazing. It's Andrew Hunter Murray. What a guy.
Lovely guy. And so such a brilliant, knowledgeable human being. You know, people might know Andrew from his brilliant podcast, No Such Thing as Fish, which he does with some of the other QI elves. So, yeah, and obviously Andrew is a QI elf, so he's one of the researchers. And there's probably a better word to describe him than a researcher for QI.
I didn't ask him that, actually. Yeah,
that might be doing him a disservice. But, yes, he's one of those
probably people. Head right. They're probably like head writers.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably.
It's more an American term, I guess.
So yeah, one of the writers on QI, which has been going for God 13 years or so now,
to the day. Amazing. Well, yeah. Since he joined,
yeah, 13.
This
years
is this
to
is his birthday episode.
Yeah, so fantastic. So yeah, and he's a great actor as well. He does a lot of improvisation. We talked a lot about that and his time when he was at university joining an improvisation group. And he's obviously in Ostentatious, which is a sort of Jane Austen inspired improvisation.
They're amazing.
Group.
If you've great, never seen them. Do go and see them.
Yeah, obviously, some previous guests. Yeah, Rachel Paris, who's been a previous guest on the podcast, is one of the members. So yeah, that's a brilliant thing, and so he's prolific, and he obviously also an author now as well.
Yeah, a multi-talented guy. This is one of those episodes where it felt like talking to an old friend.
Yeah,
just very easy to talk to, very fun, and conversation sort of flowed. As I do with all our guests, we're very lucky. But yeah, it was an absolute joy having him on, and some really lovely little nuggets of advice, and definitely a few t-shirt catchphrases along the way as well. So keep an ear out for those. But yeah, he was absolutely lovely. Before we delve in, obviously we're going to have to read out a tweet. I'm also going to Giles, and we don't do this very often.
But we like to.
No, I'm talking about something else. So I like reading tweets out, but I'm also going to just give a shout out randomly to one of our patrons, if that's okay. Which is
gone a bit FYP.
Gone a bit what I do on FYP, but we've got some lovely patrons, so I'm going to give a shout out at random to Claudia McKelvey. So
hey,
thank
Claudia.
You, Claudia, who's been one of our longest patrons, and we've got a whole bunch. We've got about 15 or 16 patrons now. We absolutely love them, and of course, if you're a patron of this podcast, you will get bonus content of every episode. So we've actually, with this episode, we've got some bonus content where we delve into the working behind the scene workings of QI with Andrew. So if you're a fan of the show and want to hear that, do sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/blankpodcast. That's patreon.com/blankpodcast, and you can hear Andrew answering some of my questions about what happens behind the scenes at QI, and some of my theories that I have about the show. So yeah, do get into that.
And so we also find out about one of the unsung heroes of QI as well.
Yes, indeed.
So if you want to know who the real brains of the operation is.
Exactly. Join our patron. Should we read some tweets out?
I'd love to. I've got one here from Rich J. Port. He says, blank pod, Jim, you foreshadowed the fuel crisis, which was obviously a few weeks ago, by mocking it in the podcast. In the Sophie Green episode. As always, a joy to listen to, bringing calm and good chat to a crazy world. What a crazy world it's been the last few months.
It has.
And I don't say that in a mocking way. It has been torturous.
You must feel quite smug. You don't drive, do you?
I don't drive, no.
So you must be feeling very smug during the whole fuel crisis.
I don't like to feel smug about this. Like we do have a car in the house. The car is literally in the house. We are car owners in the house, I should say. My wife drives. Luckily, she car shares to go to work, so they kind of all cobble together to get to work each day.
That's a good idea, actually. Very
teaching,
good idea.
Teaching children. So doing very important work. So yeah, but yeah, they're very lucky that there's the car share deal going on.
Well, that's good in general, isn't it? Because that's better for the environment anyway. To be car sharing, but obviously, yeah, the fuel crisis was weird, wasn't it? And Miranda and I both work from home, so we waited till the last minute. Basically, we didn't need to go out and panic buy any. But there was a lady in front of me when I did go and get some yesterday. Actually, there was a lady in front of me who was filling up a jerry can. I was like, how dare she?
What a
bastard.
There's
a fuel crisis on. This is unacceptable. And I was about to get my phone out and angrily tweet. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. And then when she went back to her car, she thanked me for waiting. And I was like, oh, no problem. Thank you. Okay, bye. And suddenly felt really bad and weirdly
instantly.
Complicit. So that was bad. But I don't remember foreshadowing it. So that I'm going to have to go back and listen to that episode with Sophie, which was a great episode. But I don't remember doing that at all. But maybe I have some sort of... maybe I'm like sort of the new Mystic Meg.
I was going to say, have you got any numbers that you're like think of a good this weekend?
Oh, I'm the number 25 is coming to me. 25. So no, that's a complete lie. But yeah, so anyway, thank you, Rich, for that tweet. That definitely made me chuckle, and lovely to know you're enjoying the podcast. Here's another one from ELN at Blog of a Fangirl, who's put, this is another crisis, recent crisis, Giles, Facebook and Instagram down. No problem. Go check out Blank Pod. Always keeps me entertained. So that was another crisis that we had recently where Instagram and Facebook went down for what felt like days, but it was about 5 hours, I think, in the end. But that is true. If the internet, you know, if social media platforms do go down, you can always spend your time listening to the Blank Podcast and the 140 so episodes in our back catalogue. That'll keep you more than entertained during whatever fuel/social media crisis comes next.
Well, I thought it was quite good, wasn't it? When Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp went down.
In theory, yes. But what I did was I then just
stayed on Twitter,
went to TikTok and started scrolling through TikTok for hours and made lots of jokes about it on Twitter. So, but yeah. It did make me realise. I think I am ready to. If it wasn't for comedy and a lot of gigs are booked through Facebook, I would probably leave Facebook. But you do actually need it for networking and
Facebook's
stuff,
a weird one now. I was having this conversation with someone recently and was sort of saying it's basically Friends Reunited.
I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, and I was thinking it's only sort of 10-11 years old, isn't it, Facebook? But already it's really just for sort of older middle-aged and OAPs,
which we're not far off. It's quite honest,
well, speak for yourself. Well, I know I'm older than you, but it does feel like it's where people's parents sort of hang out.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. But as I say, I sort of do need it for work, annoyingly. But if I didn't, then I think I would disappear. The only problem is there's a lot of sort of photos on there and stuff from back in the day. And I think if you delete your profile, you lose those photos. So I'd have to go through downloading all those.
Facebook probably own those photos now, anyway.
They probably do. Yeah,
you won't be able to use them ever again.
Probably do get Zuckerberg on knocking down my front door. Anyway, well, thank you.
Well, I've got one more thing I'd like to put actually. The episode with Sophie Green was also picked up that week by Good Pods, which is an excellent podcasting platform. We were in their team picks of the week. That was very nice to see. So yeah, Good Pods is a great little platform. So let's give them a little shout out because they gave us one. So yeah, thank you to Good Pods.
Well, thank you very much. That's lovely. Always nice when people like the show and appreciate it. So thank you very much. Oh, that's lovely. Should we crack on with this week's episode?
Yeah, we've probably been talking for too long.
We always do, don't we? But,
yeah. This is our chance to catch up with one another. So,
well, this is true.
We just
actually record
it.
This is true because we do we do message during the week and stuff, and a lot of our messages revolve around Crystal Palace on a Saturday. And
me saying, I don't think there's any way back, and then we like come back,
clawing it
and
back from 2-0 down.
Realise that I'm actually should never be a football pundit.
We're doing weirdly well at the moment, aren't we? But yeah, no, you're right. It is our chance to sort of catch up. So yeah, it is nice. It's the only time we see each other's faces, I think, during the week, isn't it? So
I miss your face, Jim.
Same. And it is.
What, you miss your
actually,
own face?
I miss my own face. Unfortunately, I do have to look at it quite a lot. Little bit of a behind the scenes going into the episode. Andrew's was Skyping in, zooming in, from the QI offices. So that was obviously exciting. And the webcam on his laptop didn't work. So he very kindly went into the QI backstore, found a webcam and plugged it in. And we were saying off air that actually these episodes aren't quite the same if you can't see the person. No. There is something about the visual medium that makes the conversation, I think, a lot easier. So thank you to Andrew for doing that. And and in the end, we've had a fantastic episode, which I think we should go into now.
Yes, we should.
So this is the one and only Andrew Hunter Murray on the Blank Podcast.
Well, thank you so much for being on. It's a great pleasure to have you with us. We normally start at the beginning, which seems to kind of evolve around school. And being, it feels like, you know, you're a fountain of knowledge these days. Was school a happy place for you?
As it is for so many nerdy children. Yeah. I actually did have quite a good time at school, and it was a nice school, and it was quite an academic place to be. So I didn't fit in too poorly, as in there were enough other children, in fact boys, it was an all boys school,
okay,
who were non-sporty and non-musical and had basically nothing else going on but learning stuff, that I didn't feel completely out on a limb there. So that was quite encouraging. And there, you know, as anyone who's been to school knows, there are normally a couple of teachers who you feel on a wavelength with and who you feel act in kind of mentoring roles. And I definitely had a couple of those. So, yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
I like the way Giles said as well, you're a fountain of knowledge these days, like, but obviously famously back in the day.
Well, it takes time to be a fountain of knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't just be a fountain of knowledge. You have to earn that.
And we also do say at QI and all the time that, you know, we don't know anything. We really don't. And I look through old episodes of even the podcast that we do, and I've forgotten entire episodes. After, I think we've done 375 or so. I look back and I think, I don't remember talking about that particular kind of guinea worm or whatever it was we were talking about. Yeah. But it's gone in and gone out. So we're a bit like oysters, because oysters, they filter huge amounts of water every day to get tiny particles of food, and that basically is the job that I have at the moment. It's filtering large volumes of information to get the few lovely little crumbs out of it, but you forget most of the bathwater that goes through in one end and out the other.
So you are basically a living version of that meme from The Simpsons, which is, whenever I learn something new, it pushes something else out.
Absolutely. There are about six permanent facts and everything else is on rotation.
But learning as it, you know, learning stuff for your kid or whatever, or now, it's basically just research, isn't it? It's just like good research, basically, is the basis of just being able to know stuff.
Yeah, it is, and it's changed so much, even in my lifetime. As in, I remember when I was growing up, the source of knowledge in the house was either a massive multi-volume encyclopedia, Britannica, from about 1947. So, you know, China was still run by Chiang Kai-shek in that book. Or it was the Encarta CD-ROM that my dad had, which was great because I had little tiny animations and, you know. And that was it, you know, pre-internet. And I think QI couldn't be made nearly as easily in a pre-internet world. And, yeah, so I think that's really lovely and really encouraging that these days you can find out if you know what the decent sources are and you know what you're looking for. And I guess that's the main skill to be passing on now.
Yeah, and what's trustworthy, which obviously opens up a whole can of worms of trustworthiness.
Completely.
Dorling Kindersley is a name from was that the encyclopedia?
Yes.
Was that from that? A name that's really stuck with me. And actually, I looking back, I never thought of myself as a particularly nerdy kid, but I've just had a memory pop into my head that me and my best friend Callum used to sit in his mum's bedroom on the family computer and just look through that CD-ROM encyclopedia and just and just play the little videos. So actually, I think we maybe were quite nerdy, actually, because we just spend our time literally looking through an encyclopedia.
I think that's it. But they sucker you in, didn't they? They had those amazing little illustrations of the orchestra. You clicked on the saxophone and it gave you a 5-second sax solo, and it was so exciting.
That's so good.
Yeah.
glorious days, halcyon days.
Simpler days. Yeah.
Simpler times.
But do you think, that feels like we take our brains for granted a little bit now, because we're so easily, you know, we can just pick up one of these, I'm holding up a phone, and just instantly go in. I mean, I'm desperately trying to sort of retain my internal Google a bit, you know, like you know, because it's so easy, even like, you know, you're just watching a film and you think, oh, I've seen that actor in something, and you just instantly go to IMDb. Whereas before you would be having to rattle around inside your head. And do you think we're getting a bit lazy in that respect?
I feel like this. I feel bad every time I follow the blue line on Google Maps. I feel that something ineffable is being lost, And it's too soon to tell. And we're all at the start of an enormous experiment where we don't know how it's going to end. And there's no control group. That's the other terrifying thing. Apart from maybe cabbies, I guess, black cab drivers in London, they will have the knowledge. But it is a weird thing. I was trying to remember the name of an actor the other day. I just gave up and looked it up. And it was Tim Meadows in the end, who's brilliant. And I love Tim Meadows. And I feel like I love his acting so much that I really, really should know his name by now, but I just keep forgetting it and keep on looking it up. It's about the third time I've looked up. Who was the guy? He was in Mean Girls, then he was in that great episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It was Tim Meadows.
Poor
Tim Meadows. I do feel bad about this. Yeah,
imminently just forgettable. Clearly, what a poor guy, talented actor, forgettable. That's just a real shame. But that moment when you do, because we talked about this before, Giles, in the pod, haven't we? And your internal Google. That moment where you do actually like push through and ignore normal Google and remember something. Mm. Oh, it's glorious. It's such a great moment. Mm.
It's a big win these days, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely is. Increasingly rare. Yeah.
So apart from like sort of being quite academic, and obviously you've become an actor as well, was drama something you were interested in at that time, or were you, has that come later?
I think it did come later. I was interested in what was funny. I know that, but I didn't have any conception that it could lead to work. I looked at it as though it was a completely separate universe, that the Blackadder or the episodes of Bottom I was watching, they were incredible and I loved them, but I didn't really draw a line between myself and that world at all. And I think I was thinking that, I suppose if you become a lawyer, you can be showing off in court and making jokes and people laugh and you can persuade people. So I did a lot of that kind of thing. I mean, this really is punishingly nerdy, but the, debating society, Model United Nations, something my school did called the Southcott Mock Trial, where you got to go to a courtroom, put together a little delegation, and you got to wear, I think, a lawyer's robe, and you got to go up against another school and try an entirely fictional case. I still remember it. It was about someone hitting someone else in a bar with a pool cue and then someone else glassing that person back.
So it was like GBH.
It was a GBH case with a bunch of 17-year-olds in robes were trying. I look back at it like kind of fever dream. What the hell were we doing? But it was... So that was very nerdy, but that was the only way I could see to get to that side of life performing.
So Andrew, were you the defending lawyer or the prosecutor? What can you remember your role?
That's the thing I can't remember. I can remember the quality
of
the evidence.
Delve into that Google, that internal Google. Come on.
I'm sure I would have wanted to be defending because I read a lot of again another nerdy thing here. I was reading a lot of Rumpole of the Bailey.
Oh goodness, yes,
it's incredible.
I've listened to the Radio 4 versions, which are great, fantastic.
Yeah, it's is it Julian Rhine-Tutt who plays?
Yeah.
And I think of Julian Rhine-Tutt as being about 28 because of Green Wing. Yeah. God, he's playing Rumpel these days. He's 65 and, raveled.
You remember his name, so that's good as well.
I think the cast of Green Wing got special mention. They're all burned in. So that was it. And then I got to university and I thought, I'll probably join the debating society and that kind of thing. And in my first week, I was at the Freshers' Fair and there was this stall for an improvised comedy group. I'd never heard of improv. I'd never seen an episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway? I didn't know anything about it, but I went to the auditions and got in, and that was my university kind of gone. That was the next 3 years was working and spending all my free time mucking around with that group. And it was wonderful.
I've got another question about the mock trial, if that's okay, if we can go back to it.
We can spend the whole podcast talking about that.
Honestly, I think we could. Were you wearing wigs? Or did you get wigs?
I think I might have had a wig. In my memory, I have one on. Yeah.
So excellent. My dad was a solicitor's...
It's not.
He wasn't a solicitor, but he was like a clerk. I think he was a court clerk. And he had a wig, and it was in the black tin. They had this sort of ornate black tin which it was housed in when you weren't obviously new. They used to carry these tins in and they had like a little metal handle on them, but they were
great.
Grandiose. It was horrible when you open the tin. There was this sort of stench and like, you know, obviously
never pretty hard to clean, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Head sweat.
But yeah, I do remember thinking that was, yeah, I probably did get it out now and again to
sort of, so cool.
Do mock trials in the house.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's
who cool. didn't do the washing up?
Opening statement, please. Yeah, yeah. But I actually, you were right, Andrew, talking about sort of, if you know, if you're in court and you're sort of on show and acting kind of thing. I have a theory that a lot of lawyers slash barristers slash sisters, whatever they're, I never know the difference, are actually people who wanted to get into acting or did acting, and actually that is their way of being able to perform, because it is a complete, if you watch a court case, or you know, Crown Court, a big one, it is a performance.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah, but I think you're right. I think that is an element of that whole life, and it was definitely there was a lot of drama at my school. There wasn't drama, not in that sense, you know. Yeah. There was a functioning theatrical society and so on. But I don't think I got the message anyway that this was something that was possible. And it took me a long time to work it out. It took me until about my second or third year of university before I slowly realised that there were other paths to doing that kind of thing.
So did that change things for you then? Was that when you started thinking, oh, actually, this is the sort of thing I want to sort of go into?
It's hugely, hugely. I remember there's this spell at the end of about the second year when everyone else is applying for internships at quite serious sounding companies. And I would look at the application forms and I'd think, like, I really, really don't have anything to offer these firms. Like, really. and it would be a waste of everybody's time for me to apply to these quite serious places. Because I just had an inkling that it wasn't quite going to be for me. And it took a long time to sink in, but eventually I courageously didn't fill in the application form. What a bold and brave thing to do.
And
it turns out if you don't do that, you're left with fewer and fewer options, and you have to get into the other thing. So yeah, cutting off all the bridges, even as you approach them, burn the bridges in front of you, it would be my advice, apart from the one that the sort of precarious mossy one with lots of planks missing that you will then have to walk along.
That reminds
what was
you
the course you would, oh, sorry, sorry, Jim.
I was like, that, really quickly, it reminds me of a tweet I saw. Someone said their sister always says the phrase, "We'll burn that bridge when we get to it." Which
amazing.
Now, I was going to say, what was the actual course that you were doing at university? What were you actually studying?
I studied English literature,
right,
and you know, so quite thesp adjacent and that kind of thing. It's quite a serious course. It started with Old English and moved on from there. So you had to do a lot of Beowulf and stuff like
quite heavy.
Dream of the yeah, it is. It's heavy.
Anglo-Saxon and stuff.
Yeah. Kind of fun though, and so that was the course. And English students are like cats, you know. You'd see all the chemists and all the physicists trooping off to their lectures with each other because they do so many more lectures, or at least they attend their lectures. Whereas with art subjects, attend the lecture if you like. Yeah, sure. We're not going to impose the requirement. So I didn't go to. I went to about 9 lectures in my whole degree, and 7 of those were the compulsory first term. Like this is what English literature is course. But I think I think that was fine in the end.
It worked out.
Yeah.
It was fine.
So the improv group, what kind of stuff were you doing when you first joined them then? What sort of improvisations were you doing? Was it like, was it group improvisations? Was it solo stuff? What was the kind of setup?
Yeah, they were called the Oxford Imps, and it was short, quick-fire games and scenes with a couple of you on stage, or sometimes lots of you on stage. But it was very high octane. You would dance stupidly in between each game as, you know, music blasted out. But it was run by a couple of people who really, really knew about improvised comedy and were determined to teach it. So I got this, you know, unwittingly got this amazing dojo for a few years of people who were real experts, and we got to travel. You know, we went on a trip. We'd sort of saved up money from all our shows over the year, and we got to go to Chicago, which is improv mecca.
Wow.
So it was so exciting. Yeah. And we also traveled to Nashville because one of us was from Nashville and performed a one-off gig in a a cinema that had been converted for the night to an improv theater, and we were okay, I would say, not tremendous, but the enthusiasm was the thing that got me into it. Yeah, and so I was very lucky. Lots of the people in that group, people like Rachel Paris, who's now a staple of the MASH Report, all sorts of people were in the Oxford Imps, and so yeah, it was a very very good crucible of meeting other people who were interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, improv's interesting, isn't it? Because I was. It doesn't help with this podcast. This podcast is about blank moments. But like in improv, you don't really have blank moments because you just sort of lean into them and just sort of go with it. Yes, and all that kind of stuff.
But there is, it's funny, there is a moment, there is a blank moment where you step out and there's just a moment, and it's a wonderful, frightening moment where you don't have anything. You've heard the opening suggestion at the top of the show or the scene and you step out. And ideally you step out before you've got the idea. And then you start to do something or say something. And the moment just before is really lovely. It's so frightening and it's so exhilarating and you don't know where you're going to go. And that's, improv is not it's not taken very seriously by lots of people, but I think at its best, it can be wonderful because it's a collaborative process between the audience and the people on stage. You're collectively imagining something together because we can't make a Renaissance castle or we can't make a spaceship or whatever. But if the people on stage are good and the audience are willing to go with it and provide the other half, then you can create something really lovely. And so that's why I sort of fell in love with it in the first place. Yeah.
That's really nice. I hadn't considered that actually because I kind of thought with improv, it's like, I don't know. Almost like an idea comes and then you go with it. But actually what you're saying is you go with it and then an idea comes. And
that's
really interesting.
And I feel the same about writing. I feel that when I'm trying to write something creatively, the act of having a pen in your hand draws an idea out of the brain and along the arm and into the fingers. And then you will, the best moment is writing a sentence that you haven't really thought of.
Yeah.
But because you're writing, it's come through the arm. But it's a really weird feeling.
Yeah.
It's as though someone else is moving your hand with the pen. So that moment is very nice as well. And that probably is the same kind of thing to tap it, that a moment of creating something.
Yeah, that reminds me, I for about literally about 3 days, I tried journaling. It was really good, actually. And then I did my usual thing of just forgetting about it and moving on to something else. But what was interesting about doing that was I tried to really stop editing in my head. Because it's like when you're being creative, you sort of edit and think, oh, that's shit, I'm not going to do that. Oh, no, actually not. And I was like, literally, just write what is in your head right now. Even if it's complete inane bullshit, just write it. And the act of doing that then led to more and more and more and more. And it wasn't even anything for anyone else. It was just in my notepad so that I could just get it out and not even read it again. But the act of just doing it. And so I've tried to take that into my creativity and stuff like, okay, just do it. Do what's in your head right now. And if it's crap, you go back, you edit and whatever, etc. But it's the act of, actually sort of doing it, pen on paper or whatever, and just going.
Absolutely.
Jim, it's us again. And we've got some big news.
We have indeed. Giles, I can't believe I'm saying this. We've written a book. A book about blank moments based on this very podcast.
Yeah, we've been recording this podcast for a while now, and as we've been doing, we've realised that everyone has these difficult blank moments. All our wonderful guests that we have on the podcast and our listeners get in touch with us all the time to tell us about their own situations, their own experiences of blank moments. And sometimes that can be from a personal life, from their career, the relationships they're in, or maybe it's a public situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those terms that can be applied to anything. Social anxiety, imposter syndrome, just sort of generally being off form, having an identity crisis. I mean, it's all part of the human condition. And yet we all get thrown off from time to time and sort of made to feel a bit helpless.
Yeah, so the book is made up of all these different chapters that sort of concentrate on these various themes that come up in the pod. So whether it's public failure, social anxiety, fear, mental health, grief, all the things that our amazing guests have talked about on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, and those guests include Louis Theroux, David Harbour, Reggie Hunter, Dawn French, Rachel Paris, Amanda Abington, John Ronson, Rufus Sewell, Gary Lineker, all these people that really opened up to us about these difficult moments. And what we've done is we've dived into them, explained how we relate to them, talked a little bit about our own experiences, and almost gone on a journey of this discovering blank moments and how they've helped us. And we hopefully we take the reader on a journey with us.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff in there for everybody, I think. It's a bit memoir, it's a bit self-help, and there's lots of interactive bits in there as well, so you can do your own gratitude list, and there's tips on if you're having sleeping problems. So all different things that you can take out of the book. And where can people get hold of this book, Jim?
Well, so it comes out in March in 2021, but it's available to pre-order right now from Amazon, waterstones.com and hive.co.uk.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to everyone getting their hands on it. And hopefully lots of people will be able to identify their own blank moments. And you never know what you might find out.
Yeah, it's interesting you say about, I think you're right about improv not being necessarily given the right platform for what it is, which is a great learning curve. And it's a chance to fail, which we know failure is obviously a great learning curve as well. I remember when I first started playing the guitar, someone bought me some guitar lessons because they felt like I needed to learn some grades, you know, to like, you know, you need to get better at technique and all that kind of stuff. And I went to this guy, he lived around the corner, who was an old school rocker. He played with Jimmy Page back in the 70s, and
he was great,
and he was a real blues guy, and we started playing, and he said, do you know what, I don't really want to show you how to do that stuff. I don't feel like that's right for you. Let's just do some improvisation. And we just played 12 bar blues together. He got his keyboards out, he's playing, and it stuck with me so much. And then I joined bands and playing music and stuff, and just jamming and coming up with ideas on the spot, even playing live gigs and just going off on one. It was so freeing. And actually much more joyful than learning scales, you know, in an acting point of view, just sort of learning lines and reading a script or whatever, but actually just going out and being thrown out there and performing. There's something very exhilarating about that.
Yeah, it's really funny, the balance between craft and being freed and released to do that, because you have to combine the two, don't you? You have to know a bit before you start, but also you have to, you know, what an act of restraint on that old rocker's part to not say, great, a chance to mould another identical guitar player. And that fusion between the two is lovely. That's really great. I love that.
There has to be a certain element of, I guess, self-confidence or belief or some level of knowing that, like, whatever I do is going to be okay, like, even if it's not that good. And just because I think that holds people back as well, that sort of lack of confidence in yourself. I'm just going to go for it and like see what happens. Yeah. And that can be freeing, I think.
It definitely does. It doesn't ever go away, the what if this is rubbish. I mean,
yeah,
I'm only about 15 years into my career, but still, I have it all the time.
And how do you get through those moments then when you have that?
I feel bad. I feel bad, and a bit of the confidence goes out of me. I don't know how I get through it. That's probably it. It's not a very good way through it, to be fair. But I suppose I don't stop. I don't just stop doing the thing. Stop dead or anything like that. And when you're on stage, and again, this is something that I saw people doing when I was doing improvised comedy at university and things like that, it's amazing to see someone turn around a room that has gone a bit cold, the audience are not quite sure, the people on stage don't have conviction in what they're doing, they're thinking, oh, is this a bit silly? Which is, you know, complete death for the entire vibe. But I've seen people go onto a stage and turn it around and lean harder into the thing that is happening or that they're doing, and it starts to pick up again. And that's magical. It's really such a skill to do that. And it, as you say, it's through confidence that it happens. So I think I sometimes try to remind myself, it's a thing I read in a book by Stephen King. Stephen King wrote a book called On Writing, which is really fab, and has lots of great advice. But he says you have to just bring it, whatever it is, to the blank page. Just don't turn up with nothing and expect it to, you know. And but remember that you have the energy to do this. And the fact that you're spending your time doing this means that there's something going on here.
Yeah.
So use that.
Yeah.
And keep bringing it to the blank page.
I love that. A lot of people have quoted that book, actually.
I really
must read it, because it's one that comes up quite a few times.
It's really fun. It's quite short, and then
his other books.
I'm on board now. Okay, cool. I'm going to
read it. Yeah, because like you see a Stephen King book, it's normally about 800 pages or something.
Yeah. This is quite short, and it's half a biography of his life, which has been pretty extraordinary, and then it's half him on the writing process. And it's a good one.
Right, I'm Googling it now.
Yeah. So has writing obviously been something that you've always wanted to do as well?
Yes, and again, kind of like with the lawyer thing, I had an impression of myself as a writer for about 20 years before I actually wrote my first book, which is, you know, that shows a lot of confidence, I'd say. Just unearned confidence. From the age of about 5, I wanted to be a writer. I just couldn't believe these magical worlds that I got to go into and you know, create. And weirdly, considering that I was studying English, you know, doing improvised comedy on the side, reading a lot in my spare time, I didn't go through the barrier and start properly writing until a few years after I left university. And it does take time. It really does take time. I was writing during these periods, but not writing kind of, I don't know, not proper full things. I think of myself as quite a late starter in that sense, really. And then by the time I was in my kind of mid-20s, I was writing lots of short stories, and then that built up to writing a full novel. It took time. But I knew I always wanted to do it, but sometimes it's easier to do something that you don't really, really want to do. Does that make sense? God, I really, really want to do this, and if I stuff it up, that's my chance gone.
Oh, God. What?
So
what
I'll just do this thing I want to do a bit less for a while.
God, you know? What is that quote? That's like, and it's a very famous one, that's like, the greatest fear we have is not that we will be bad at something, but that we are actually all powerful and we can do all these things. And it's actually the fear of, I am butchering this quote. And it's the fear of fucking it up, basically, when you have this opportunity to be good, and not the fear that you are bad, if that makes sense. And I 100% relate to that, and I've whole notepad some of ideas and projects and stuff that I think, well, I'm not ready to do that yet, it's not going to be good enough, etc. but actually it's just leaning into it and doing it, isn't it?
Yeah There is, what's that story about someone, there was this huge row between a couple of people, and both in the creative industry, and they were being dragged away from each other, and one just hissed to the other, average talent. And that is another enormous fear. What if I do this and it's fine?
Yeah
but no more.
But I've got that is literally the theme of a future stand-up show that I want to do about being fine, and about how, like, maybe it's okay to be fine, like, actually maybe it's okay to just, like, only so many people can be the best and you're not the worst. Maybe it's okay to be fine. I don't know. Also, when you were saying there, what's that story? I was just thinking, great idea for a podcast called, like, what's that thing? What's that story? What's that quote? And it used to just be an hour of people going, but is it? And then they did that, didn't they? And when was that?
I'd be amazing at that. I'd be amazing.
We'd all be brilliant at that. And we'd never get to any resolution. We'd just be constantly just thinking about.
No. Join us next time on what was that?
What's the name of the podcast? I think often we come to these things at the right time. So maybe it was the right time for you. Do you feel it was the right time for you to write a novel? You know, maybe you've been able to get to the point where your craft is where you want it to be.
I'd like to think so, but also part of me just wishes I'd cracked on and done it 10 years earlier. I did. There is a phenomenon, isn't there, where we justify all our past behaviours and actions and think, well, it's all led me to here now. Yeah, and if I wasn't here, I'd be someone else. If I was on my sixth novel now, I'd be absolutely chuffed. But, you know, but then again, it is true that working at the places I started working after uni, the Private Eye and QI, where I still work now, has been also the most wonderful experience. So it's hard to be very angry about it, you know.
And also you have... you're a young man, you're younger than both of us, well, you have plenty of time. You know what I mean? We have, especially when you're in the creative industry, it's not like we're professional footballers and we're coming up to mid-30s. I think, oh, God, I better hang the boots up. We have plenty of time to do these things. These are lifelong careers, really.
Yeah. It's the thing I find myself thinking and saying to other people a lot is careers are long. It's okay.
Yeah.
Careers are really long. Yeah. You won't. You have time to do all of this.
Exactly.
You might kick yourself, actually, if you do this now. And you've used up a valuable project that could have kept you going in your 80s, you know, whatever it is.
And, you know, judging by sort of current living cost of living, we'll need to work into our 80s as well. So
I did used to do that a lot. I used to be really preoccupied with when people had done their first big thing.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
You know, I was thinking, God... He was 27 when that book came out. Oh my God. Wait, I'm 29. I haven't even started the thing. You know, so let's say I do it really fast and it's out by the time I'm 31. Oh my God, 27, 31. They're oceans away from each other. And that has faded in the last... Not a very long time.
About 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. I do want to do something called When Did... or. I don't know what this is, but to ask people, when did you stop being such an idiot and such an ass? And for me, the answer is always about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I always feel right now is the time when I'm approaching the truth of things. And I look at everything up to there and I think, oh, I was callow, I was young. It's, you know, I don't dislike myself then, but I think I didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah.
But now I'm starting to get it. I don't know if you guys have the same thing.
Yeah.
I hope you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I go through waves where I think... I'm really quite content with like the person I am at the moment, and then 6 months down the line, I think, "Oh, I'm nowhere near. I want to see this disaster. I'm an idiot," and it just seems to sort of, come on with. But I was the same as you. You see those constantly see those lists of like J.K. Rowling didn't write Harry Potter until she was 38 or something, and then you know so and so didn't write his first movie till he was. Don't forget, you could do all these things, but yeah, I used to be the same. Or comparing myself to like other comedians I know from the circuit and be like, oh, they've on TV already and they're only 25 and they've done this thing and they've done Live at the Apollo and all this kind of stuff. But it's what, oh God, I'm going to butcher another quote. But comparison is the
thief of joy.
Thank you, Giles. There we go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that that's really good. I love Thief of Joy.
Yeah.
Thief of Joy is a good title. Is it a title already for something? It must be.
I don't know, but it's a good one, isn't it? Yeah. Well, I call it compare and despair, which is when, you know, and obviously it's exacerbated by social media because we're seeing how everybody else is doing so well.
Yeah.
And then we reflect on our own, I don't know, our own non-successes when we're perfectly well, you know, and it's and I think social media is obviously, yeah, I think for creative people is not always a great stumping ground, really.
No. Actually, I have a thought just on this. So a few months ago, I thought, because my first book came out a year ago and, you know, there was a little bit of cash left over from it, and I thought I'm going to get a neon sign made that says a line that I want to bear in mind always, and I'm going to stick it above my desk, and the sign says, "This is not the cake," and the point of that is when you are working on anything creative, you look at the messy pile of flour and eggs and sugar in front of you. And then you look up at all these other people with these gorgeous cakes and you think, oh, my God, my cake is shit. And you just have to lean out a little bit and remember, this is not the cake. The way what you are seeing is the making of the cake and you haven't seen the making of anyone else's. You don't know what's gone into it. So so that's the sign. And I got it made and it's sitting above my desk. And it's very useful to remember.
I love that. And then you eat the cake and you're like, oh, fuck, it's too floury.
Too much sugar.
It's like my mother baked it.
It wasn't bad cake.
And Paul Hollywood stood next to you going, get out of my tent.
Yeah, it's got a soggy bottom on it. And
Yeah. When I was in the sign shop, the guy said, at the neon sign shop, he said, oh, very interesting. Does it mean something to you? And we realised after a while, he thought I was trying to get the sign made, which said, this is not the case. Actually, it's quite good and quite Buddhist sounding, isn't it?
Yeah.
I nearly changed my mantra in the shop just to please the sign maker.
Oh, it's like those things you see, those memes you see where the sign will come out, "This is not the cake, in neon, please." And then they've added that into the end of it. Yeah. In small font, please, or whatever.
That's great.
I like that. I really like that. "This is not the cake." That's, yeah, I can relate to that big time. Big time.
Andrew, are you hard on yourself in those moments? Like, you know, when you're feeling like, you know, maybe it's not going the way you want it to go?
Yes, I am. And it's not very helpful. And it's, I think I used to be really hard on myself, and I used to get into real, you know, sort of black dog fits of thinking this is all over already, you know. I haven't done that for a while. I don't know why. I don't know what the difference is, though. Partly it might just be time passing and, you know, disasters I've presaged in my head not coming to pass when I haven't done the thing by the age of 27 or whatever. I don't. Yeah. So there's a recommendation. Let several years of time pass and you'll find you're dealing with it much better than you were. I do try to almost to consciously zoom out, literally to zoom out, as in I do a reverse Google Maps on myself. This is where the English degree comes in handy. In Chaucer's Troilus and Criseyde, stay with me.
It's never been quoted on this podcast.
Yes, first. There is a moment at the end. Spoiler alert, Troilus dies. I think Criseyde might be dead at this point as well. Anyway, Troilus dies in a battle, or possibly he kills himself. I can't remember. See, this hasn't gone very well if I'm not remembering the ending of the thing. But what I do remember is that he zooms up into the air above his body, and he looks down at the field of earthly concerns, and he sees how small it all is, really, and how little his concerns in life are or were. This is being written in 1400, and it's an incredibly useful technique now to think, zoom out a bit, and then you can zoom back in, and you've just had a little refresher in how little it matters, you know, if you haven't done this by this time, or this hasn't turned out exactly what you were thinking. So, yeah, that's what I do in those moments.
I really like that, because when you're describing that, I'm thinking of like out-of-body experiences, but like they're normally linked with something negative, aren't they? Like something's going so badly, you sort of like come out of yourself and look down and think, oh my God, he's ruining this. But actually, that's quite nice to have it in a positive framework, I think, actually. And I guess it's perspective, isn't it? I guess it's sort of coming out and seeing perspective of where you are in relation to the world and where the world is in relation to the universe. We are, you know, a speck of dust and all that. And actually, I think that can be really quite, not refreshing, sort of almost resetting a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Do you remember that there's a bit in one of the Hitchhiker's Guide books, the Total Perspective Vortex, which is this device that you're plugged into, and it shows you your size in relation to the rest of creation. Yeah. You are an invisible dot on an invisible dot. Yeah. And it drives everyone who goes into it insane. And no one ever recovers from going into the machine. So if you can do a partial version of that, don't zoom out too far.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the message.
Yeah. Get the zooming right. Yeah. That's great. So you said you were working for Private Eye. How did that come about? Was that... From university, obviously, you were doing the enterprise stuff. So was that soon after that bit?
So I knew I was thinking about comedy, and I knew that, you know, I hadn't filled in the application form. So it's great. The bridges are slowly being dismantled in front of me. And then by really good luck, I met John Sessions, who passed away last year, extremely sadly. A brilliant comedian, improviser. He was coming to speak at the university, and... he was the man who introduced me to QI, to John Lloyd, the producer of QI. And he put in a good word for me because, you know, I got to have dinner with John Sessions, who I loved from his acting, his comedy, his performances.
Wow. So Stella Street was John.
Yes, Stella
Which,
Street.
They filmed, so I live in Seaford on the South Coast, and they filmed loads of it here. There was a cafe called The Tuck Inn, and that's where Michael Caine... They had Michael Caine serving fry-ups.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I always have a real affinity with that show because they filmed quite a lot of it
that's
down here.
Great.
Yeah, sorry,
that's
anyway.
So good. Just, yeah. No. And I knew him from there was a version of Gormenghast, which he'd been in when I was about 13, and I'd loved because it was so eccentric and weird and wonderful. And so I met him, and he put in a good word for me. He and I sort of met and chatted, and it turned out that he saw I wanted to do comedy. I was not quite knowing how I go about it. And he said, why don't you talk to John Lloyd, who is a great man, the producer of QI, Blackadder, Spitting Image, Not the 9 o'clock News, everything really. And John and I met in my second year, and he said, well, I don't have any work for you at the moment, but maybe stay in touch, you know, maybe in a year or so. And after my degree ended, I got in touch again, and again and again. It was a bit pushy. And eventually he said, okay, you can come and do a month of work at QI. And that was 13 years ago, about to the day, actually, that I started.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think,
amazing.
Yeah, I think today is my... Oh. Yes, it's the 8th. Yeah, 13-year birthday at QI.
Amazing. Happy birthday. Well, happy 13th birthday.
Thank you. So, that was how I started on that. Yeah, and Private Eye I'd written to when I was 16, and they'd sent me away. Said, no, please... Please come back when you're not 16 anymore. their advice too: let several years pass, and then maybe we can talk. And I've been a fan of that from again an early young age, about the age of 10. I'd been reading.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. bet much. Only for the jokes and the cartoons. I didn't read any of the stories at the age of 10. Those were the two big and lucky breaks I had. And completely good fortune. And I'm sure that if they hadn't happened, I'd be doing something completely different now.
But there's an element, like you say, they're big breaks and good fortune, but there's an element of you making them happen, because you sort of mentioned twice there about persistence in terms of getting in contact. And when you are in the creative industry, like half the work, especially if you're freelance, half the work is pitching and grafting and trying to... And it's really easy,
hustling.
Actually, when you get... Hustling, completely. And it's really easy when you get your first... rejection / comeback, whatever kind of thing. It's very easy to think, I'm never talking to them again. It's difficult to sort of build yourself up mentally into that state to be able to be a bit pushy, but it is kind of half the gig.
Definitely. And you exactly. And that's what we were saying about careers being long.
Yeah.
By all means, burn bridges to other completely different lives, but actually... you're going to be working with people in this industry for years, and a big part of the work is getting on with people, and maybe they are not so keen on the thing you've just made, but to be pleasant to work with and to try and be equable when someone's saying, I'm afraid this isn't quite right for us just at the moment, it's so hard to bear in mind that that's not a no forever, and it's a no to this thing now, but... keep pushing, keep the lines of communication open, because we're all going to be hopefully working with each other for decades, that's the dream. And so, that's another thing to have in mind,
And it's so hard to not take that stuff personally as well, because they say it's a no for now, and that's the crucial bit, but like you do feel like, but this is the thing I want.
Yeah, but you only hear the no, don't you?
Yeah, you only hear the for now. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, it's really hard to keep that kind of perspective.
Absolutely.
But it is just persistence. Like that seems, if anyone ever asks me any advice, I'm just like, just crack on, just keep going, like persistent. Yeah. That's my plan for this career, this life. I'm just going to keep going. And hopefully everyone else will give up at some point and I'll be the only person left to hire me.
That's what we're all hoping, isn't it?
Every creative person's secret dream to be the only one.
Exactly.
And the only person they can turn to.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think there's something in that. Just persist. I guess. Keep going.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it also builds durability, and you know, we all want to be get that one yes straight away, but you know, sometimes you have to go through quite a few no's before, and then at the end of the day, it is just that one yes that you need, isn't it?
When my first book, which is called The Last Day, was going to be published in the UK, and we'd had the publishers had said they wanted it, which was amazing and wonderful. And that had all happened quite quickly, and I was a bit complacent. And then my agents said, my agent sent it out to an American agent he knew, my literary agent, and he works with a US agent who obviously just has much better contacts at US publishers. And don't worry, guys, there's a happy ending. It was eventually published, but in the interim, they sent it to a lot of people who did not dig it and said, nah, it's not quite for us. And the amazing thing about that is you get sent the specific nose, and because they're trying to cut, and they can be quite unsparing. And there's we just don't think this works as a thriller or as a book.
It's the words always, I have a problem with.
Exactly. And they always add a thing at the end saying, "Well, I hope you find a fabulous home for it elsewhere." And I think, why?
You've just
told me.
Obliterated it.
I know. And I definitely find that tricky because people are saying that they don't dig something you've done, which obviously is never nice. But also there's a funny element of, well, what do I do with this?
Yeah.
What? It's not a note of, well, I'll try and correct that the next time I write this book, which I'm not going to ever again. So you get this funny. So that's funny when there's not quite a conduit for it. But normally you can find a quiet room to scream in for an hour or two, and that I find does the job.
As long as you've got the right room, the right screaming room is absolutely imperative in the creative industry. That's really interesting because the feedback element of being creative and sometimes the lack of it I find really difficult. So my wife is an actor and I've started doing sort of advert castings and stuff with my comedy agent because basically there's more money in that than there is in sort of doing stand-up. And a lot of the time you will do a self-tape or you'll go and do a casting in town. Obviously there's like fewer of them recently, but they are coming back. And you'll never hear back. You won't even get a no. You'll suddenly see the advert out there and think, oh, okay, someone else got that. You might get a recall, and then after the recall, you might get a yes or a no. But normally you hear nothing. And that is really hard because you think, okay, so was I close? Was I terrible? But then when you're talking about the feedback there, I'm starting to think, actually, maybe do I want that feedback? Do I want someone to say, well, actually, your acting was so bad, we've cancelled the advert?
Or even worse, it was the whole look we didn't like.
But I had that. I had that in one where it was positive, but like the role was... literally the role was tired dad, I think, or disheveled dad, and I did the recall for it actually, and I think it was the casting director said, great Jim, that was great, and she pointed at the screen and went, and this is your look, is it, this is your look, I love it. And I was like, so what you're saying is I look really disheveled and tired. I actually tried for this casting, but thank
proper
you very
method
much. Thank you. But yeah, I don't
that's
know
that's very funny. Yeah, no, the maybe or the not hearing is worse than
I think
than
so
a
too
no in lots of times, especially for something that where you're keen to either try and get on and make the thing or move on and try the next thing or try it somewhere else, whatever. But this process of, well, we're having another meeting in 6 months, so we'll bring it up again then, is a peculiar kind of death to the creative spirit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, I agree. I hate the being ignored. This is being ignored so much harder. It's like you know, you get ghosted by a publisher or like a casting agent or something. That is,
or a major broadcaster.
yeah.
It's a big ghost.
It's looming over you every time you turn the TV on.
that's hard to take, I think. I'd rather have a rejection, even a brutal rejection if I had to choose.
Yeah. And the glory of making No Such Thing as a Fish as a podcast is that it's quite hard to decommission us, you know, up until the moment where the four of us decide that we don't want to make it anymore, which we're not seeing any signs of at the moment, then we will keep making it. And as long as there's an audience of people out there who are listening, then game on. That's lovely.
That's kind of the beauty of a lot of the sort of more modern content creation. Wow, that sounds really sort of wanky, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Especially with podcasts and platforms and stuff, once you've built up an audience, they're kind of there, really. Unless you do something horrendous. I don't know what. But they are kind of there forever, aren't they? So that's kind of quite comforting, I think. That that you can keep. You can
and
keep
we're always
doing
horrendous things, but you just don't broadcast.
You just don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
And if you do, more fool you. You know, it's your own fault.
Well, Andrew, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much for being
and
on
you
the
guys. Yeah, thanks so much brilliant. For having me.
No, it's been fantastic, and and look forward to seeing all the stuff that you're doing. I mean, are you working on a new book? You got a new book
yes.
in the pipeline. Fantastic.
It's in the pipeline, but I don't know if it's past the magic point at which I can say what it is.
Yeah.
But no, it's in.
That's
it's in,
exciting,
it's,
though.
It's gone in at one end. Yeah. That sounds rude. It's not that.
What a way to end the
book.
Episode.
It's going to be like, yeah, it's going to be shitted out at the other end into the local bookshops.
We were doing so well. No, brilliant, Andrew. Thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. It's been an absolute joy.
Well, there you have it.
So staring blankly at me
because I'm waiting for you to say because I can't quite hear the music in my earphones for some reason. But so I'm waiting for you to say okay, and you just you sort of looked at me like, what is Jim doing? Why is he not talking?
I thought I'd just add a bit of jeopardy to the end of the podcast for you.
Oh dear. We're really giving people this week a little insight into what a shambles this podcast actually is behind the scenes.
Well, anyway. Probably why we haven't got any other professional broadcasting work.
Exactly. After 3 years. Andrew Hunter-Murray, what a guy. Fascinating insight. Very, just some lovely references that we haven't had in this podcast before. I don't think Chaucer's come up before.
Nope.
but a very easy guy to talk to and some lovely sort of insight there into how his creativity works. And again, like I said at the top, it felt like we were chatting to an old friend.
Yeah.
And I loved being in his company. So thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, lovely. And Andrew's so easygoing and was very happy to talk about all different aspects of his work. And, you know, obviously we went into his sort of educational journey and all that kind of stuff, which was always interesting to hear about how people sort of their career trajectories is always an interesting kind of insight. And a really good guest to have on. Really enjoyed his company and wish Andrew all success for everything he does going forward.
Absolutely, especially with this the second novel that he teased us with at the end there. So definitely we'll keep an eye out for that as well. Just a very talented guy forging his way in the world, and I think we're going to hear a lot more from him, to be honest, in coming years. And happy birthday for his 13 year birthday on QI. That's a funny little quirk, that, isn't it, to the day. So there you go. And that's it. Oh,
what do you
think?
What do you feel about the number 13, Jim? Are you because you know?
Oh, I'm not.
No,
I'm not. I don't subscribe to that. It's literally just a number.
Superstitions in general. Are you a superstitious person?
What about
three drains? Would you walk over three drains?
Oh, I do actually. Don't do that one. Yeah, no, I do. I do avoid three drains. Yeah, yeah.
Is
that a superstition? I guess it is a superstition.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose it's a safety thing as well, isn't it? You might fall in.
Well, I don't really walk over any drains, if I'm totally honest. Maybe more of a safety thing. But that's from child. Feels like that was just something as kids we didn't do.
What other ones? Under ladders. Don't tend to do, under ladders.
Oh, I'm not too fussed about that. Would you include scaffolding in the ladder thing?
Scaffolding, yeah. I'm a bit wary, but I will walk for it because sometimes you just can't avoid it.
Yeah, exactly. I do, but I'm careful.
Mm.
I think this is more health and safety than superstitions.
Well, also sometimes in scaffolding they've got a ladder going up as well. So you're going under scaffolding and a ladder. Double jeopardy.
I do know. We do know someone actually that did get something came off scaffolding and hit her on the head, and she sued for quite a lot of money. Mm. So I don't know why I've mentioned that now, because now it's going to make everyone anxious about walking under scaffolding.
I know.
Just be careful, people out
safe,
there.
But yes. Just be careful.
But no, the 13th, Friday 13th and all that, I don't, I'm not really too fussed about it. There's too many other things in life, in the world to worry about, Charles, than
a number.
This, a random inconsequential number. So, so no. But speaking of, it's not numbers, it's letters. That's a bad link.
I thought you were going to say, and speaking of inconsequential.
our social media platforms. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do let us know, or any episodes that you've listened to. We love hearing from all our listeners. And anything you've picked out, if anything's resonated with you, do let us know. Twitter is the best place to do that. Our handle is
@blankpod.
It is. But if you're on Instagram or Facebook, assuming it hasn't gone down again, then you can get us on there, and it's the same handle,
@blankpod. And obviously, if you're younger than 45, you might not be on Facebook.
No, so Twitter is the place.
So Twitter or Instagram, the more hip of the
we just say that to make ourselves feel a bit better, because
I guess at some point maybe Facebook will become like sort of a mecca for hipsters, you know, like
maybe
you'll see people with their in the cafe with their typewriters and their wind-up telephones.
Yeah, what you're basically describing, what you're describing now is what you're describing is East London, basically. Dalston, that is Dalston. Anyway, listen, you do you, people. If you want to go back on Facebook,
Nothing wrong with that. I love seeing a typewriter in a cafe. I love it.
What I like about that is it is people. It is people doing being themselves. I like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that's the end of the pod.
It is the end of the pod. It's probably gone on too long. Truth be told,
I enjoy it. Well, anyway, thank you to Andrew for being a fantastic guest. Thank you to our patrons as well for their support. We do really appreciate it. And don't forget, you can hear more from Andrew on Behind the Scenes on QI at our Patreon, patreon.com/blankpodcast. And thank you, Giles. Good to see your face again.
Thank you, Jim. And good to see your face after a week away from it.
And I'll see it next week as well.
You will.
And you guys will hear from us next week as well on the Blank Podcast. But until then, take care, be careful with scaffolding, and we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is a Blast Box Media Podcast.